Let's talk. Let's talk. John Brown. Travels with Mari Daddy, and I hope I got that correct, but I'm sure she's going to tell me if I got it wrong. This is after a botched spine operation left her partly paralyzed at the age of only 45, Busy Frost found herself unable to enjoy the active lifestyle that she loved in Saudi Arabia. That was remedied 6 years later when her airline captain husband Frosty proposed they buy a Harley Davidson. What happened next is the subject of a great new book called Travels with Mari Daddy. I think it's called that, but here to put me correct is Busy Frost herself. Good morning to you, Busy.
Hi there, good morning.
Good to have you. Right, first off, have I pronounced the motorcycle's name correctly?
It's Mari Daddy.
Mari Daddy, yeah?
That's correct, yes.
And where does that come from? What does that mean?
It means beautiful in Kiswahili, which is the lingua franca of Kenya, and that's where I was born and my husband as well. And when we bought the motorbike, as soon as we looked at it and the gorgeous paintwork, we just said, that's called Mari Daddy. It's a lovely word anyway.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit about your life in Saudi, and obviously what happened with this operation, which went sadly awry.
Well, life in Saudi was pretty good, but it was a lifestyle you had to get used to, because as a woman you weren't allowed to drive a car, and you were supposed to wear a black cloak and a abaya. And then I had this back operation for a very rare condition. I had a herniated disc in my thoracic spine, and I was left unable to walk properly. I had to learn how to walk in a complete cut off my normal lifestyle. An lifestyle is very much involved with sport and playing tennis and, you know, doing all sorts of things like that. And suddenly I couldn't do any of these things. And I felt completely cut off from our social groups. I had to sort of rethink who I was, how I was going to fit in with my friendship and our social groups. It was a process of really coming to terms with what had happened. And I thought I was never going to have another adventure in my life again. And for me, life without adventure is nothing. You know, you've got to get on with day-to-day life, but you've got to have some adventure in your life as well.
Yeah, because you're only 45.
And then my crazy husband.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. My crazy husband said, why don't we buy a Harley Davidson? I was like, you must be up to nuts. Are you having a midlife crisis or something? You know, I'm injured. Do I really need to go on two wheel? And then I kind of thought, well, I can either sit at home and count on having a really boring time, or I can join in the fun and get on the back of the Harley and see what happens.
I mean, did he, when he came up with this one? Yes, I mean that's apart from getting an open top sports car and maybe wearing leather trousers, that's the classic midlife male crisis, isn't it? Basically, getting a Harley.
Yeah, yes, it is. He'd already done the open car. And, you know, we already had that, which was fine. But now we needed the motorbike. It was crazy. He'd ridden a motorbike apart from on his coffee farm, you know, when he was growing up as a kid. And I was the one that had the motorbike when we were engaged, and I was living and taking him on my pillion seat around London. And so then, you know, he thought, well, she'll probably bite it. You know, she already quite likes motorbikes. I think she'll go for it.
So did you have to make any sort of special sort of fittings, as it were, to the bike, any adaptions because of your condition?
No, we didn't. The only thing that we had to make sure of was that we had a very comfortable seat, saddle.
Right.
Because I suffer from these burning pins and needles in my legs, and they can be exacerbated by sitting on an uncomfortable seat. So we bought ourselves a very comfortable seat with a thing called a tour pack on the back of the bike, which gives you a really good back support. And it was like sitting on a really comfortable armchair. And then Harley Davidsons are renowned for their vibration. And at some point, it said, well, surely they should get rid of that vibration. Motorbikes shouldn't have that. And everybody said, no, 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 we like the vibration. And so I was sitting in a comfortable armchair with this lovely vibration. You know, what more could a girl want?
It's only 23 minutes to 11 over here in Spain, but hey, let's go for it. When we think about Saudi, we kind of think you know it all, don't you? Think, okay, well, it's the cities and it's a lot, awful lot of desert, and that's kind of it. But obviously, with your adventures, you decided to go and sort of discover the country and find out more about it.
Well, we actually already knew a lot about it because by the time we bought our Harley Davidson, we'd lived in the country for 21 years and already done a lot of exploring in our Nissan Patrol. So we weren't new to what was around the country. And Saudi Arabia is not just a big flat desert. It has the most incredible mountain range, which starts in the Yemen right in the south, and it goes right the way up along the western side of the Arabian Peninsula, all the way up to Jordan. And so there are these fantastic roads up and down the mountains. You have to travel a long way to get anywhere in Saudi Arabia. So, you know, a 600-kilometer ride in a day was a standard riding day. Yeah.
And so what are there any particular rules about women riding passenger in Saudi? Because there seems to be a rule that uses everything else. I mean, my sister was a nurse in Saudi, and she said the thing that used to get her was that she wasn't allowed to hold her then husband's hand and whatever, but she'd look up and there'd be two armed guards walking hand in hand four steps in front of them.
That's exactly right. And yeah, there were not many women who dared to ride pillion with their husbands because of these regulations. And we were stopped quite a few times. Whenever I had my hair dangling a little bit out, a great excuse to stop us. And they always wanted to check with the wife of the person you were with, because it was illegal to be in a car or on a motorbike with a man who wasn't your husband or a close member of the family. And I did have a lot of fun once when we were stopped by a police full-face crash helmet, which had a dark visor, and the policeman insisted on seeing my face. And, you know, if I was a Saudi woman, he wouldn't dare to ask to see my face. So I just said, no, that's forbidden. You cannot see my face. And it was wonderful, just his expression of, you know, caught out at their own game kind of thing. And then he pleaded with my husband to be allowed to see my face. So then I let him see my face.
And so,
but it was a fun little,
yeah.
It was a fun little trick to play on him.
You know how that thing where you go and you meet, one of the great things about going on an adventure is that you meet people and you sometimes meet other travelers as well. Are there many people sort of traveling around Saudi, or did you sort of find yourselves pretty much left to your own devices on your own? Because, I mean, if you do Europe, for example, you're bound to bump into backpackers, Aussies in VW campers, et cetera, et cetera. But I should imagine Saudi, it's not one that you actually, I think of as one of those people sort of having they'll do the cities, and that's kind of it.
There were not many expatriates who did any exploring around Saudi Arabia, and the ones who did were Brits. The American expatriates are very often camping trips into the desert. And just to give you some idea, when we did our 6,500-kilometer journey all the way around Saudi Arabia just before we left, the only expatriates we saw were some in the capital hotel in Riyadh and one in a more remote hotel. We didn't see one other motorcyclist, and we didn't see any other expatriates on the road. None at all.
Just strikes me, because I'm a petrol head, what's the speed limit on these open roads, or can you absolutely open it up and just go for it?
Well, they have, on a lot of them, reduced it to 110. But generally, if you were out on the open road, it would be nothing to see something whiz past you and doing 180. Yeah.
And presumably it being Saudi, I mean, if you're going to get passed by something, it's going to be something I would imagine quite flashy sometimes. You know, the occasional Lamborghini, Ferrari, Porsche, Bentley, you name it, they got it sort of thing.
Yeah, sometimes it was those cars, but a lot of the time it was just, you know, big 4x4s, cars like that.
And
the posh cars were more in the cities, not on an open road. Yeah,
and obviously I always think about, you know, I'm not a biker. I don't ride motorcycles since I fell off one when I was 17. But I see motorcyclists come, especially here, and you think, oh, blimey, because some of the other drivers on the road don't exactly look out for them. What's the standard of roadmanship on a Saudi road normally like?
Absolutely horrendous. They abide by the highway code. And if you're on the mountain roads, I mean, they think nothing of overtaking on blind corners, overtaking into oncoming traffic just to make way. I mean, the driving was pretty terrifying there. It really was. But coming from Africa, the driving in Africa could be pretty terrifying too.
Yeah.
So we were kind of used to that kind of driving, except in Saudi it was much, much fun because the roads were better. But people coming from Europe, they found it very difficult to deal with the driving.
You said that you'd been living in Saudi for 21 years before you took this trip. Because you knew the country quite well, was there an area or place that really surprised you because you thought you knew it all, but actually you discovered something fresh, something vibrant, something stunning about the place that you thought you knew so well?
Not really, but I think what did surprise us or surprise me on my last trip around Saudi Arabia was finding how many people being a bit more outspoken about the government and didn't like how the government imposed their ideology on people in other parts of the kingdom. And previously, people wouldn't dare to sort of speak out like that. And we were very surprised at some of the frightness, because Saudi Arabia is a Sunni Muslim country predominantly, but there are pockets of areas where they are Shia Muslims. And the Saudis don't like Muslims at all. For example, Iran, the kind of big number one kind of enemy. They're the big players in the Middle East, is Saudi Arabia, Sunni, Iran, Shia. So Saudi Arabia was always trying to marginalize the Shia community. And we found on our final tour around Saudi Arabia, these people were being quite vocal about how they didn't like the imposition of the Riyadh ideology on their communities.
Presumably that's been a big shift. That's a big shift since the death of Fahd, King Fahd, of course, who was basically ruler for decades, wasn't he?
Yes, you're absolutely right. And when King Abdullah took over, he had been the de facto king for quite a long time. But King Abdullah gently tried to start introducing reforms, but didn't dare to the extent that Prince Mohammed bin Salman has done. He's just gone fast forward. And, you know, it's now a completely different country to what it was when we were there.
So why did you decide to put all this down in a book? I mean, it's a fascinating book. So why did you decide? Because lots of people go traveling, but very few think because they're having such a time, they think, oh, well, nobody's going to be interested in this. But obviously, yeah, you know, with the Harley Davidson and with this country, which we still don't know an awful lot about, it was obviously screaming out for a book.
Yes. And, you know, I worked as a freelance journalist in Saudi Arabia for all the years that I was there. And so, you know, I love writing anyway. And I just, you know, so many people would say to me, you know, you must write a book. So this is only the first one about my experiences in Saudi Arabia. But there was so much to share with other people that outsiders have no idea about at all about Saudi Arabia and what it is. To be, you know, there are very few books written about Saudi Arabia by women. There's quite a few by men, but most of the political or religious analysis type of things. And I wanted something from a female point of view about what it was really like being there.
as you said, it's a country that dominates our news on occasions. But again, we just think it's just desert and that's it, and oil fields and opulence. That's the kind of outside view of Saudi.
Yeah, which it isn't. There are big pockets of poverty around the country, and we came across those in southern Saudi Arabia. Communities living in these little sort of very much like an African mud hut. Communities living there, and I was very surprised at the poverty in those communities.
The book is called Travels With, and I'm going to get it wrong again, so here we go. Well, I'll let you say it. It's Travels With...
Travels With Maradi,
right.
Harley Davidson Adventures in Saudi Arabia.
It's by Busy Frost, who we're speaking to today. Busy, if people want to find more about you or about the book, is there a website? Do you do social media? Where can people track you down in the nicest possible way?
The best way at the moment is on Facebook. My website provider, unfortunately, seemed to go bankrupt or something, and so I've got to create a new website. So at the moment, my biggest place is social media, is Facebook. Yeah, I'm active on Facebook.
Busy Frost, thank you. It's been great to speak to you. Congratulations on the book and on your adventures. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, it's been a great pleasure talking to you.
Talk Radio Europe.